I think the whole system is being questioned. I really do. And you can see that. The world is preparing to do to trade in their own currencies and settle imbalances in gold, period. If you don't see that, you're missing the biggest picture ever.
You're watching Silver News Daily. Subscribe for more.
Well, you know, the deliveries have continued unabated then again. And that to me is really all you need to know. I mean, we could do a show every month, once a month, and just talk about the amount of deliveries. Now, I'm being facetious, but in context, deliveries never really happened. Less than 1% of contracts stood for delivery. And that's really the thing that people need to understand is that, you know, when they say what's different this time, that's what's different. What could break the cartel? That's what breaks the cartel. You know, Bernie Madoff ran a great shop until people asked for their money back. And when you talk about the amount of deliveries, they're not insignificant whatsoever. Looking back at the March delivery, there were 14,559 gold contracts. That's 1,455,900 ounces of gold delivered in the month of March. In silver, 9,212 COMEX contracts delivered. That is 46,060,000. And one of the things that Ed Steer does that I like, I know he's a regular guest on your show, and great respect for Ed, picking up where Ted Butler passed away and picking up where he left off. Thank you for the assist. He talks about the deliveries that are on the first day, right? And when you talk about first day deliveries, for the March contract, the first day deliveries were 2,604 gold and 6,214 silver. So 2,604 ended up being 14,559 by the end of the month, which is really unusual. And 6,214 silver, 6,214 silver ended up being 14,559. Now, it's very unusual, I think, to see the number of contracts added as the month progresses. And, you know, it's up 5-6 times. That's unusual because normally the first day of delivery, those that are going to stand for delivery do so. Now, when you do it later in the month, it's not as...
There is a moment in every failing system when the story changes completely. Up until that moment, people still think they are talking about opportunity. They think they are talking about gains, about trades, about peace, park targets, about whether silver goes to this number or that number. They think they are still living in a world where the only question that matters is how much money can be made. But then something shifts. Quietly at first, then all at once. And suddenly the conversation is no longer about getting rich. It is about getting protected before everyone else realizes what is breaking. That is the shift we are living through right now. Because what is happening in silver is not just a metal story, and it is not just a commodity story, and it is definitely not just another cycle where people chase the chart and hope to sell higher later. What is happening now is tied to something much bigger, something much deeper, and something far more dangerous than most people are willing to admit. It is tied to the weakening faith in the dollar itself, not just the currency on paper, but the entire belief system behind it. The trust, the assumption, the idea that the system still works the way it used to work. The idea that the rules still matter. The idea that the promises being made can still be honored in the same world that made them. Because once trust starts leaving a system, price is no longer the real story. Price becomes the distraction. Price becomes the mask. Price becomes the thing people stare at while the real movement happens underneath their feet. And underneath the surface right now, all over the world, something is happening that should make every serious person stop in their tracks. Countries are preparing for a different kind of future. Central banks are behaving differently. Large players are behaving differently. Physical metal is being treated differently. Trade relationships are changing. Settlement mechanisms are changing. The appetite for U.S. paper is changing. And if you are still looking at silver like it is only a vehicle to make a quick profit, you are looking at the smallest part of the biggest story. Because silver's role in this kind of moment is completely different from what most people have been taught. In normal times, silver is pitched as the high upside cousin of gold, the more volatile metal, the speculative metal, the one that can run harder when the market wakes up. And yes, that is part of the story. But in a world where faith in the dollar is weakening, where faith in institutions is weakening, where faith in markets and governments and official narratives is eroding in real time, silver starts becoming something else. It starts becoming a line of defenses. It starts becoming stored labor, stored purchasing power, stored independence, something outside the promises, something outside the banking layer, something outside the confidence game. And that is what makes this moment so important. Because most people still think the danger will arrive with sirens. They think there will be one giant headline, one giant crash, one giant announcement that tells them now it is time to move. But history does not usually work that way. Systems do not usually fail with a polite warning and a countdown clock. Most people realize what happened after the repositioning has already begun, after the strong hands have already moved, after the people who understand the system have already started taking delivery, taking possession, and stepping away from paper dependence. By the time the average person feels the urgency, the easy window is gone. And that is why this discussion matters so much. Because this is not about fear for the sake of fear. It is about recognizing the world as it is, not as we wish it still was. It is about understanding that when the reserve currency of the world starts losing moral authority, political trust, financial trust, and global confidence, all at the same time, the implications reach far beyond foreign exchange markets. They reach into your savings, your purchasing power, your retirement, your ability to preserve the value of what you have worked your whole life to build. And in that kind of environment, silver is no longer just a bet. It becomes a form of self-respect, a refusal to leave everything you own inside a system that is showing visible cracks from every angle. So the real question is not whether silver can go higher. The real question is why the people closest to the fractures in this system keep moving toward real metal while the general public is still staring at screens, waiting for reassurance from the same machine that helped create the problem in the first place. Why are physical deliveries still telling a story the mainstream refuses to touch? Why is the world steadily building alternatives to dollar dependence? Why does the appetite for tangible wealth keep growing while trust in the financial architecture keeps falling? And why are so many people still acting like this is just another market conversation when in reality it may be one of the clearest warnings of a much larger monetary transition? Because if Andy Shechtman is right, and more importantly, if the evidence behind what he is saying is right, then silver's key role in the weakening dollar is not just that it could make people wealthier in nominal terms, it is that it could help protect people in a world where nominal wealth itself becomes harder to trust. And once you understand that, you stop asking the lazy question of how high silver can go, and you start asking the much more important question of what kind of world forces people back into real money in the first place.
It's obvious, I guess, is the way that I would look at it. The first day notice for April deliveries, remember, first day notice, considering that in just about every month we've seen, the first day notice is much smaller than what we see by the end. A big, big first day notice in gold, 10,138 contracts. That's 1,013,800 ounces of gold delivered. And 1,181 silver, which is 5,905,000 contracts, were delivered the first day. That is a very big deal, Dunnigan. And to me, it's from the standpoint of gold and silver, it encapsulates everything that you and I have talked about since 2020, when you were the first person that I really hammered home what I was noticing in 2020 then as the deliveries, as being way different than anything we'd ever seen. And it's a trend that I was fortunate enough, I guess, or lucky enough to stumble on and grab onto it and watch it, because that to me is the difference. And I never understood it when Jim Sinclair used to say, this is how you win, you stand for delivery. I had a local financial advisor in Minnesota when I lived there who had followed Jim Sinclair and told all of his people to stand for delivery. And I laughed about it because he had all these clients who had 100-ounce bars of gold, subsequently ended up trading them into coins. And I thought, well, that was just a huge pain in the butt for the clients. And it didn't amount to anything. And when you're in the middle of things, when things are normal, right, when trust is abound within a system, you don't see it. Even though someone's telling you, but this is how it happens, you don't see it. You dismiss it. And I think everything you could argue centers around trust. I mean, empires don't usually die like that. I would argue they die when trust openly leaves the room, quietly leaves the room and openly. And I think people need to understand that the reserve status for the United States is all about trust. It's built on one thing and one thing only. Above all else, when we close the gold window in 71, it's trust. And trust in institutions, trust in country, trust in the shipping lanes, trust in the country being not only neutral, but the stabilizer of the system. And this is how we took over for the pound sterling. We had the balance sheet, we had the gold, we had the military, we were trusted. We were on a moral high ground then. Greatest generation ever. I was a young kid starting in this industry, talking to people your grandfather's age, Dunnigan, and they were amazing people, an amazing generation. The question that I have really been thinking, and you know, the middle of the night when I can't sleep, is what happens when the same trust that built this country erodes? And you see it everywhere. We've seen this trust, and I have been, it's kind of weird. Sometimes I think, you know, you own a metals company and you sit up and for several years now, you've been speaking about things that are...
Everything Andy is describing starts with one simple idea that most people overlook, and that is the dollar is not strong because it has to be. It is strong because the world has chosen to trust it. That trust is the entire foundation of the system. It is what allowed the United States to close the gold window in 1971 and still maintain dominance. It is what allowed trillions of dollars to circulate globally without direct backing. It is what allowed foreign nations to hold treasuries, settle trade in dollars, and believe that the rules would remain consistent, predictable, and fair. But here is the problem. Trust is not permanent. It is not guaranteed. And most importantly, it does not collapse all at once in a dramatic, obvious way. It erodes, slowly at first, almost invisibly, and then suddenly, it becomes undeniable. And that is exactly the phase we are moving through right now. Because when you listen closely to what Andy is saying, he is not talking about inflation in the traditional sense. He is not talking about interest rates or CPI prints or short-term economic cycles. He is talking about something far more structural. He is talking about the breakdown of confidence in the system itself. The kind of breakdown that happens when countries start questioning whether the dollar is still neutral, whether it is still reliable, whether it is still safe to build an entire financial architecture around. And we have already seen the warning signs. The freezing of foreign reserves sent a message across the world that dollar assets are not as untouchable as they once were. The increasing weaponization of the currency made it clear that access to the system can be conditional. And once that realization sets in, it changes behavior. Because if you are another country, another central bank, another major player, you have to start asking a very uncomfortable question. What happens if that trust is used against you next? That is where the shift begins, not in headlines, not in panic, but in quiet preparation. Countries begin exploring alternatives. They begin reducing exposure. They begin building systems that do not rely entirely on the dollar. And this is exactly what Andy is pointing to when he talks about bilateral trade, local currency settlement, and ultimately using gold as the neutral reference point. Because gold does not carry political risk in the same way. It does not belong to one country's policy decisions. It does not depend on promises. And when trust in the dominant system begins to weaken, the world naturally looks for something that sits outside that system, something that cannot be frozen, manipulated, or denied in the same way. And this is where the dollar's position becomes vulnerable, not because it collapses overnight, but because demand for it starts to change. If countries trade more in their own currencies, they do not need to hold as many dollars. If they do not need as many dollars, they do not need as many treasuries. And if demand for treasuries weakens while debt continues to grow, the pressure on the system increases in ways that are very difficult to contain. This is why Andy keeps bringing everything back to trust. Because once trust begins to leave, everything built on top of it becomes less stable. The currency, the bond market, the financial system, all of it depends on that underlying belief. And when that belief starts to fracture, the effects ripple outward into every asset class, every market, and every individual holding their wealth inside that system. Now here is where it gets even more important. Because while most people are still focused on domestic narratives, on stock markets, on short-term moves, the global players are already adjusting. They are not waiting for confirmation. They are not waiting for permission. They are responding to what they see happening beneath the surface. And that response is what is driving the shift into real assets, especially gold, and by extension, silver. So when we talk about a weakening dollar, it is not just about exchange rates. It is about a gradual loss of global confidence. It is about a system that is no longer seen as unquestionably stable. And once that perception changes, even slightly, it sets off a chain reaction that becomes very difficult to reverse. And if that is the foundation of the shift, then the next question becomes unavoidable. If the world is already preparing for a system where the dollar plays a smaller role, what does that mean for the assets that sit outside of that system? And why are the biggest players moving toward them before the public even realizes what is happening?
Structural in the sense of moral, social, liberal distortions that have changed really the trust in this country from every perspective. It's not just the dollar being weaponized. It's not just foreign reserves being frozen. It's whether or not our allies feel that our guarantees are still real. And, you know, guarantees of patrolling the shipping lanes and making sure everyone is safe. You know, you look at what happened in Afghanistan. We made a big deal about that, too, that the trust has been chipped away at. It's been eroded. And I don't think that the dollar disappears immediately, Dunnigan, but I think it is beginning. The world is preparing for a system that is not all about the dollar. And we've been right, you and I, talking about this. We've focused on it being a fragmented system, right? A system that is not unipolar, but multi, where systems of local currencies, bilateral trade, settling in the one neutral reserve asset, gold. Why do you think central banks have been buying it hand over fist? Maybe they saw this coming long before we did, and we just saw. I saw the gold being vacuumed up by new entities on COMEX that were given a new identification, the others. Remember in 2020, the others? Who the hell are the others? Sovereign wealth funds. But now we've seen openly the central banks doing it. We're seeing it happen here. And I think that the fact that, you know, countries are openly signing up to cross-border payment systems like the SIPS or the Embridge, and they're both operational, using local currencies, bilateral currencies, and settling the one neutral asset by which everything is measured in gold. There is no coincidence that this is happening. And Jim Sinclair was right. He was right. You stand for delivery, you win. But we probably don't have the power to do this. We certainly can add on to it now. We can be the icing on top of the cake. When central banks and levels, people at this level are taking millions of ounces every month, and it's completely dismissed and ignored by the mainstream, missed altogether. I am as positive as I have ever been, ever, that gold is being rewoven into the system because we are not trusted anymore. We are not trusted in any respect the way we used to be. We're not trusted. Our institutions aren't trusted. Our judicial system isn't trusted. Our government isn't trusted. Our markets aren't trusted. You look at four glitches on the LBMA, on the COMEX since Thanksgiving. Two up, two down. Circuit breakers break, overheating, all a bunch of nonsense. You look at two glitches on the LME, the London Metals Exchange, which ironically is owned by the Chinese. But yet glitches that aren't glitches. They are, we're supposed to believe it, just like we're supposed to believe the night before Jeffrey Epstein passed away, his cellmate was moved out, the guards fell asleep, and the cameras...
Just before we get going, we just launched the official Silver News Daily Telegram. To kick things off, we're running a 10-ounce silver giveaway. Yes, real physical silver, not a voucher, not digital credits, actual bullion. This Telegram will be our new home for real-time silver discussions, market insights, collection picks, and everything precious metals. It's where the community truly comes alive. Here's how to enter the 10-ounce silver giveaway. Be subscribed to Silver News Daily on YouTube. Turn on the notification bell. Comment 10-ounce giveaway on three separate videos. Be an active member of the Telegram group and say hi. Once we hit 500 active Telegram members, we'll pick one lucky winner to receive 10 ounces of silver shipped directly to you. So get in early, stay active. And this is where things start to move from theory into reality. Because what Andy is describing is not some future possibility. It is something that is already happening right now, quietly, steadily, and without the kind of attention you would expect for something this significant. The world is not waiting around to see if the dollar weakens further. The world is preparing for a system where it does not have to rely on it in the first place. You can see it in the way countries are restructuring trade. Instead of routing everything through the dollar, more nations are entering bilateral agreements, settling directly in their own currencies. That might sound like a small adjustment, but it is not. It is a fundamental shift in how global trade is conducted. Because every transaction that bypasses the dollar is one less reason to hold it, one less reason to accumulate treasuries, and one more step toward a fragmented financial system. And it does not stop there. The development of alternative payment systems is accelerating. Systems that are not connected to SWIFT, not dependent on Western infrastructure, and not subject to the same controls that have defined the dollar system for decades. These are not experiments anymore. They are operational. They are growing, and they are being adopted by countries that are large enough to matter. But the most important piece, the part that ties everything together, is how these systems settle imbalances. Because at the end of the day, trade always leaves a surplus and a deficit. Someone is owed something. And what Andy is pointing out is that increasingly, that something is not being trusted to remain in dollars. Instead, the neutral reference point is shifting back toward gold. And that changes everything, because when gold becomes the asset used to settle trade imbalances, it reintroduces a form of discipline into the system. It removes the ability to simply print your way out of obligations. It creates a standard that exists outside of politics, outside of policy, and outside of promises. And the fact that central banks around the world have been accumulating gold at record levels is not a coincidence. It is preparation. They are not buying gold because it is trendy. They are not buying it because of short-term price expectations. They are buying it because they see where the system is heading. They see a world that is becoming more divided, more localized, and less dependent on a single reserve currency. And in that kind of world, gold becomes the anchor. Now, here is where silver starts to enter the conversation in a much more serious way. Because silver exists in a unique position, it has always been tied to gold monetarily, but it also plays a critical role industrially. And right now, both sides of that equation are strengthening at the same time. On one side, you have a global monetary shift that is pushing attention back toward hard assets. On the other side, you have a structural demand story driven by energy, technology, and electrification that continues to grow regardless of monetary conditions. We are already seeing this play out. Industrial demand is surging, particularly from sectors like solar, electronics, and advanced manufacturing. Countries like China are aggressively importing silver, pulling large amounts of physical metal off the global market. Supply is tight, inventories are being drawn down. And yet, despite all of this, the broader public conversation still treats silver like a secondary asset, something optional, something speculative. That disconnect is what makes this moment so unusual, because while the public debates price ranges and short-term movements, the underlying structure of the market is shifting. Physical demand is rising, strategic accumulation is increasing, and at the same time, the global financial system that once suppressed and stabilized these markets is starting to lose its grip. So what you end up with is a world that is slowly splitting into two layers. One layer is the visible system, where prices fluctuate, headlines dominate, and everything appears relatively normal. And the other layer is the physical system, where real metal is being accumulated, where delivery matters, and where the rules are starting to change. And if you follow that second layer, the one that does not get talked about nearly enough, you start to see a very different picture. You start to see a system that is already adapting to a future where the dollar is no longer the uncontested center. You start to see why gold is being pulled into a more central role. And you start to understand why silver, sitting right beside it, may be far more important than most people realize. Because if the world is building a new framework for trade, settlement, and trust, then the assets that sit outside the old system are not just investments anymore. They are foundations. And that raises a question that most people have not even begun to ask yet. If this transition is already underway behind the scenes, What signals are the biggest players following to position themselves so aggressively in physical metal while everyone else is still focused on the surface?
Didn't work. They're lying to us in our face openly. And I think the bottom line is this is why central banks are buying gold at a record pace. All of the cliches, gold is not someone else's liability, no counterparty risk, but they're true. And the game is changing because of deliveries. And a system that lacks trust, that wants to use bilateral trade to not use the dollar anymore, means they don't need to hold as many dollars, meaning they don't need to hold as many treasuries. This is where the problem starts to happen. We're massively in debt. The world doesn't want our treasuries anymore. Our fiscal irresponsibility and the lack of trust is getting to a point where if you hold in dollars and you don't see this, it'll be the biggest mistake you've ever made. You do not buy gold to get wealthy. You buy gold because it is wealth. And it has never been more obvious, if you're looking, that the people who make the rules are agreeing with that statement. And it price is the greatest tool of misdirection. I've said that a million times, but it is betrayed by the deliveries. Period. End of story. Drop the mic. The deliveries that do not stop should be all you all need to see. Because at this level, at billions of dollars every month, these people do not screw around. And the fact that they are being covered in a cloak of journalistic nonsense, where nobody in the mainstream will talk about who's standing for delivery every month for 16, 17 straight months, and it is not stopping. And here we are, the first day of delivery. What did I say? First day of delivery, and we are at 1 million ounces of gold and 5 million, almost 6 million ounces of silver. And if this is the case, if I'm right, which I, in my gut, I know I am, maybe this is why the dollar's dropped to a 31-year low this month in terms of foreign reserve assets held by other central banks. So, you know, a lot of times people make things too complicated. There are a lot of people that I watch and I have great respect and admiration for, and I use a lot of their information to formulate my own thinking, and they make it too difficult, too tough, too complex. It doesn't need to be complex. The fact that you can see the trust is broken around the world, you can see how we are viewed around the world, and you can see the ramifications through the deliveries across the globe. So I'll stop rambling, but I think it's really, done again, as simple as that.
And this is exactly why gold is moving first and why silver is sitting right behind it, waiting for the moment when the market finally understands what is really happening. Because gold is the signal. It is the asset that central banks trust. It is the one they accumulate quietly, consistently, and without hesitation. When confidence in the system begins to crack, gold is always the first place serious money goes, not because it is exciting, but because it is certain. It carries no counterparty risk. It does not depend on a promise. It does not rely on anyone else's ability to pay. And in a world where trust is fading, those qualities become everything. And that is exactly what we are seeing right now. Central banks are buying gold at record levels, not talking about it, not advertising it, just doing it. Month after month, year after year, pulling physical metal off the market and storing it away. That is not speculation. That is positioning. That is preparation for a system where trust is no longer assumed. But here's where it gets interesting, because silver has always followed gold in these moments, just not at the same pace in the beginning. Silver is different. It does not get the same respect at the institutional level, at least not at first. It is more volatile, more misunderstood, and far more influenced by short-term sentiment. But historically, that is exactly what sets it up for the most explosive moves later on. Because once the monetary shift becomes obvious, once confidence in the system deteriorates further, silver does not just follow gold, it accelerates beyond it. And the reason for that is simple. Silver is both money and industry at the same time. On the monetary side, it benefits from everything driving gold. Loss of trust, currency debasement, capital moving out of paper assets and into tangible ones. But on the industrial side, it has something gold does not have, and that is unavoidable demand. Silver is critical for solar panels, electronics, energy infrastructure, and the entire electrification push that the world is moving toward. It is not optional. It is necessary. So what you end up with is a metal that is being pulled in two directions at once, both of them bullish. monetary demand rising because of distrust in the system, and industrial demand rising because of global development and energy transition. And at the same time, supply is not keeping up. Silver is largely a byproduct metal, meaning production does not respond quickly to price. Deficits persist, inventories shrink, and physical availability becomes more important over time. Now connect that back to what Andy is saying. If gold is being rewoven into the system as the neutral settlement asset, and if silver sits right next to gold as a monetary metal with additional industrial pressure, then silver is not just tagging along. It is being pulled into the same structural shift, just from a different angle. And yet the market still does not fully treat it that way. Most people still see silver as secondary. They focus on its volatility. They focus on its pullbacks. They focus on short-term price movements instead of long-term positioning. But that is exactly how these transitions always look before they become obvious. The signal is there, but it is not yet widely accepted. And that creates the opportunity, but also the risk of misunderstanding what this really is. Because if you think this is just about silver outperforming gold, you are still thinking in the old framework. The real story is that both metals are responding to the same underlying shift, a shift away from trust in paper and toward trust in what is tangible, what is finite, and what exists outside the system. Gold is leading because it is the foundation. Silver is following because it amplifies that move and connects it to the real economy. And when those two forces come together, monetary stress and physical demand, the result is not a normal market cycle. It is something much more powerful, which is why the next piece of this puzzle becomes so critical to understand. Because while most people are still watching prices, still reacting to headlines, the biggest players in the world are not watching the same indicators. They are watching something else entirely. Something that tells them when the system is under real pressure, not just perceived pressure. And that signal is showing up in a place almost no one in the mainstream is talking about.
To come by, really difficult to come by right now, are platinum American Eagles. Everything else I can get, I don't know about, you know, the quantity. I look at the world behind me and I say it's truly amazing to me that it is this way. We have, I think, the only people that are really active right now are those that understand exactly what, and they're sophisticated big traders and they're large orders. The public doesn't get it yet. They're usually the last. We talked about the little man rule, talked about the people who are closest. You know, the Cantillon effect says the people are to the money win. If you could call it Cantillon part two, would be the closest to the information. And the people who understand what's happening are preparing and taking action. People are too concerned about the price that gold and silver had gotten so high, and the pullback, which we've all become accustomed to in this industry, freaked out too many people, and it certainly had its effect. People are moved by emotions, fear being the greatest of all. And I don't know if that gives any clarity to your question at all, other than to say I'm surprised that it isn't as that it isn't more dire in terms of supply. I really am. The U.S. Mint, however, is the model of inefficiency, and you know, they've just been a disappointment really for the last several years. They're barely keeping up right now. What happens when the public jumps on? And I think the public will jump. I mean, you look at what you're seeing in the equity market. I mean, you're seeing from March 4th to the 11th, the largest number of S&P futures dumped by institutionals ever. You're seeing the big money move away from equities. Being the world move away from treasuries. You know, you look at this war as an example, and typically when we've seen wars before, you see two things. You see the dollar go up as things are liquidated. A rush for liquidity creates demand for the dollar. The dollar gets a bump, but you also see treasury yields go down and bond prices go up because there's the rush to safety, right? Not this time. In fact, this time it almost the treasuries are being sold and is being purchased by the big money through these rates have gone up, which is difficult for, I think, people to comprehend who have been, you know, mainstream dollar bulls and analysts forever. The public, the big money, are diverged. The big money is owning gold and selling treasuries. The big money sees things clearly. The little guy doesn't. The little guy is still all in equities. They're all in traditional systems, in the banking system. They don't own gold and silver because, well, gold's too high and silver's too volatile. But that plays right into the hands of whoever the hell is standing for delivery at levels no one's ever seen before. And it's an easy manipulation for these people if that's what they're trying to do. Who are these people? I don't know. People with a lot of power and a lot of money and who aren't using margin to stand for delivery, who see things very clearly. And
this is where the entire narrative shifts from what people think is happening to what is actually happening. Because if you want to understand where this market is going, you cannot just watch price. You have to watch behavior. You have to watch what the biggest players are doing with physical metal, not what they are saying on television, not what the headlines suggest, but what is actually leaving the system. Because for decades, the precious metals market operated in a very predictable way. Futures contracts were traded, positions were rolled over, and very few people ever asked for delivery. In fact, less than 1% of contracts typically stood for physical delivery. It was a paper game. And as long as confidence in that system remained intact, it worked. But what Andy is pointing out is that this has changed, and it has changed in a way that almost no one in the mainstream is willing to acknowledge. Now you are seeing massive amounts of gold and silver being taken for delivery. Not just once, not just in isolated cases, but consistently, month after month. Contracts are no longer just being settled in cash and rolled forward. They are being converted into actual metal. And that might sound like a technical detail, but it is not. It is one of the clearest signals that something deeper is happening. Because when large players start demanding physical delivery, it means they no longer fully trust the paper system to represent real ownership. It means they want the asset in their possession, not as a promise, not as a contract, but as something tangible. And as Andy put it, the system works fine until people start asking for their money back. That is when the pressure begins. And what makes this even more unusual is how these deliveries are unfolding. Normally, the majority of delivery requests happen right at the beginning of the contract period. That is when participants declare their intention. But now, you are seeing deliveries increase as the month progresses, multiples higher than the initial notices. That is not normal behavior. That suggests additional demand entering the system after the fact, quietly, without drawing attention. So while the surface level story shows price volatility, pullbacks, consolidation, what is happening underneath is a steady drain of physical metal. Gold leaving, silver leaving, inventory being reduced. And at the same time, this is happening alongside rising global demand, tightening supply, and increasing geopolitical uncertainty. That combination matters, because a paper market can function smoothly as long as most participants are willing to settle in cash. But the moment enough participants demand physical, the system starts to strain. It becomes less about price discovery and more about availability. And when availability becomes the question, price is forced to adjust in ways that can be sudden and extreme. This is why Andy keeps coming back to deliveries as the single most important indicator. Not sentiment, not technical analysis, not even short-term price movements. Deliveries, because they reveal intent. They reveal what the biggest, most informed players actually want, not what they say they want. And right now, their actions are very clear. They are taking metal. They are removing it from the system. They are choosing certainty over convenience. And they are doing it at a scale that we have not seen in previous cycles. Now contrast that with the general public. Most people are still focused on price dips, waiting for a better entry, reacting emotionally to volatility. They are still operating within the mindset of a normal market, where pullbacks mean hesitation and breakouts mean opportunity. But the players standing for delivery are not thinking that way. They are not trying to time the perfect trade. They are securing position. And that disconnect is critical, because when you have one group accumulating physical metal aggressively, while another group hesitates because of short-term price action, it creates a gap in understanding. And historically, that gap only closes one way. The price eventually moves to reflect the reality of physical demand. So if this trend continues, if deliveries remain elevated, if physical metal continues to leave the exchanges, then the question is no longer whether the system is under pressure. The question becomes how much pressure it can handle before something breaks. And that leads directly into the next piece of the puzzle. Because if the signals are this clear, if the behavior of the biggest players is this decisive, Why is the broader public still so disconnected from what is happening? Why are most people still treating this like a normal market cycle when the underlying mechanics are anything but normal?
If this continues, look, if we walk away from the Straits, and now you got Trump saying to England and some of these NATO countries, in particular England and France, you know, go get your oil yourself and get some courage, go find some oil yourself. The rhetoric is getting divisive. This isn't an environment where we would expect good things to happen to the dollar, because if we leave and they're still in control, the dollar hegemony is dead. And the belief that you will be protected by the United States after Afghanistan, then this, or look at Iraq. We go in there, we destroy everything. Here comes ISIS. And we're still there 22 years later. The world does not believe in the dollar system, the petrodollar system, where we exchange protection and shipping lane safety. Well, what shipping lane? We're the most powerful military in the world, and the straits are still closed. So I think the whole system is being questioned. I really do. And you can see that. The world is preparing to trade in their own currencies and settle imbalances in gold, period. If you don't see that, you're missing the biggest picture ever. When you see this, the Asian countries, which are 800 million people, twice the size of the U.S. and China's largest trading partner by far, sign on to the SIPs, the cross-interbank payment system, not SWIFT compliant or compatible, and settling imbalances in gold, what more do you need to see? But this is just the icing. I think all of these countries within the BRICS infrastructure, that is what they are setting up. That is the whole idea behind the expansion of the Shanghai Metals Exchange. The world is accumulating gold and silver. The public is still here in this country, still under the same belief that everything's going to return to normal. If we leave, we're dead. And if we stay longer, well, what's going to happen to the price of oil? Not just oil. How about helium? There's all of these helium tankers that it needs to be like way below 100 degrees below zero Fahrenheit to keep the helium safe. Helium is used to make all the microchips, the AI, this entire AI boom. And if you disrupt the helium, and the liquid natural gas plant in Qatar is already force majeure, and they said it could be 5 years before they're up and running. All of these ramifications of oil and fertilizer byproducts and liquid natural gas and helium, every day that we do this, it becomes worse and worse and worse and worse. So what do we do? Do we stay and fight? Or do we leave? Either way, it just seems we're in a bad place. I think the world understands this and is moving away from the treasury, as evidenced by bill, and is standing for delivery globe for metals, as evidenced by lack of demand for U.S. paper. And they look at the mess that, you know, and this country, Iran, is standing up to the United States and proving to be far more, I think, difficult to deal with than we had bargained for. So it's a bad situation. Ultimately, either outcome is great for gold. Bad.
And the reason the public is still disconnected from all of this comes down to something much simpler than people think. It is not a lack of intelligence. It is a combination of conditioning, distraction, and timing. Because the average person has been trained to view markets through one lens only, price. If the price is not exploding higher, they assume nothing important is happening. If the price pulls back, they assume the opportunity is gone or that the narrative was wrong. Everything is filtered through short-term movement because that is how the system has taught people to interpret value. But what Andy is pointing out is that price, especially in a market like silver, can be one of the most misleading signals you can follow because price can be managed. It can be influenced. It can be used to shake people out, to create doubt, to manufacture a sense of normalcy even when the underlying structure is changing. And while people are reacting to those short-term fluctuations, the real activity, the physical accumulation, the delivery, the positioning, continues quietly in the background. That is the first disconnect. The second is psychological. Most people operate with what is called normalcy bias. They assume that the future will look like the past, that systems will continue to function the way they always have, and that any disruption will be temporary. So even when they see warning signs, they downplay them, they rationalize them, they wait for things to go back to normal. But what if normal is what is changing? Because if the dollar-based system is actually fragmenting, if trust is actually eroding at a global level, then there is no return to normal in the way people expect. There is only transition. And transitions are uncomfortable because they force people to rethink assumptions they have held for decades. And that leads to the third reason, timing. The public is always the last to move, not because they are incapable, but because they require confirmation. They wait for the headlines. They wait for validation. They wait until the shift is obvious, visible, and undeniable. But by the time that happens, the easy phase is over. Andy calls this out very clearly. The biggest money, the most informed money, does not wait for confirmation. It acts on signals. It acts on behavior. It acts on what is happening beneath the surface. And right now, that money is moving into physical metal, not out of it. Meanwhile, the public is still anchored to the old framework. They are focused on equities, on traditional portfolios, on the idea that diversification within the system is enough protection. They are still comfortable holding the majority of their wealth inside banks, inside brokerage accounts, inside instruments that depend entirely on the stability of the system itself. And that works until it doesn't. Because what makes this moment so unique is that even now, with everything happening, the shelves are not empty. The system is not visibly breaking. You can still buy metal, you can still move money, you can still operate as if everything is fine. And that creates a false sense of security. But underneath that surface, the conditions are changing. Institutional money is rotating, sovereign behavior is shifting, physical demand is rising, supply is tightening, and most importantly, trust is being questioned in a way that has not happened in decades. So you end up with two completely different realities existing at the same time. One where everything looks relatively stable, where markets fluctuate but continue, where people go about their daily lives without urgency, and another where the foundation is slowly being restructured, where the biggest players are preparing for a different kind of system, and where the signals are pointing toward a long-term shift that has not yet been fully priced in. And that gap between perception and reality is where the opportunity exists, but is also where the risk of misunderstanding is the highest. Because if you wait for the public to fully wake up, if you wait for the moment when everyone agrees that something has changed, you are no longer early. You are reacting. And by then, the behavior we are seeing now, the steady accumulation, the consistent delivery, the quiet repositioning will likely have already translated into something much more visible, which is why the next step in this discussion becomes so important. Because once you accept that the public is late and that the biggest players are already acting, the question shifts again. It is no longer about whether silver has a role in this transition. It is about what that role actually looks like in a world that is becoming more fragmented, more uncertain, and far less dependent on the system people have trusted for generations.
For the United States, unfortunately, I don't think we'd focus on what the public is doing is what I'm trying to get at by all of this, because the public is always the last person to the party. It's the doing this behind the scenes that are doing it without the mainstream media talking about it. That to me is the evidence that the mainstream media is complicit or told not to, or just are lazy and fat and stupid and don't go looking. So I don't know if I'm making sense today, but I'm trying to think of a bigger picture that the public here in the United States is the last entity that I would go validation. In fact, when the public buys, I might start thinking it. Because the public is just asleep at the switch and has been this entire process. And look, even where gold is right now, I don't know, it's at least double from when Trump took office. At least double, if not more. And silver, I don't know, 2-3 times where it was. So it was $30. So it's you know, almost tripled, right? Almost. And so, you know, people get too focused on all-time highs in a market that's never found price discovery, but they don't know that price discovery because they don't dig past the price. They don't dig past the headlines. I've never been more certain in my life that gold and silver will accentuate to levels people think impossible. And I've also never been more certain that that's not a great thing for this country, which is a sad part of it all. And I believe that. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't protect yourself. You're not buying gold and silver to get wealthy. You might, in dollar terms, be wealthy if you own enough, but that's not why you do it. And you're doing it because the biggest money in the script is showing you the path. Don't look at what the people in this country are doing. If you do, you'll be misled with the rest of the herd. Hope that in a very, very diluted roundabout way answers your question about the public, because to me, the public doesn't know squat. And the public is the last indicator we should be following. It's everything we see on COMEX. It's everything we see on the LBMA. Everything we see on Shanghai. It's everything we see in the cross-border payment system. It's everything we see in united groups that are finding strength and unity in numbers. A country and a system that has lost its bearing, and it's very easy to see. That is what you need to focus on. The rest will just distract you. So not to disparage your question, which is valid, it's just that the public doesn't get it, the mainstream doesn't get it, and the inventory in this industry right now is not a good indicator of where we are in the system. Does that make sense?
And this is where silver's role completely changes, because in a world that is becoming more fragmented, more uncertain, and less trusting of centralized systems, silver is no longer just a trade. It becomes a tool for stepping outside of the system. Because think about what is actually happening. If global trade is shifting toward local currencies, if gold is being used as a neutral settlement layer, if trust in financial institutions is being questioned, then the entire structure people rely on to store and transfer wealth is being reevaluated in real time. And in that kind of environment, the question is not just where can you grow your money, it is where can you hold it in a form that does not depend on anyone else's promise. That is where silver comes in. Because unlike digital assets, unlike bank balances, unlike stocks or bonds, silver is something you can actually own outright. No counterparty, no intermediary, no reliance on a functioning financial network to validate its existence. And that might not seem important in a stable system, but in a system where trust is eroding, it becomes one of the most important characteristics an asset can have. It becomes independence. And this is why Andy keeps emphasizing that the biggest players are not just buying exposure, they are taking possession. They are moving away from the idea of ownership on paper and toward ownership in reality. Because in a fragmented system, access matters just as much as value. If your wealth depends on a system that is under stress, then your wealth is indirectly exposed to that stress. Silver removes that layer. But it also does something else that is just as important. It bridges the gap between everyday people and the kind of protection that gold provides at a sovereign level. Because gold operates at the highest tier. Central banks, governments, large institutions. Silver operates at every level below that. It is accessible. It is divisible. It's divisible. It is practical. And in a world where more people begin to question the safety of their savings, silver becomes the entry point into real tangible wealth. Not theoretical wealth, not digital representations, actual physical value. And when you combine that with everything else we have discussed, the industrial demand, the supply constraints, the monetary shift, the physical accumulation, silver starts to take on a completely different identity. It is no longer just reacting to gold. It is reinforcing the system that gold is re-entering. Because if gold is the anchor for a new financial structure, silver becomes the working layer beneath it. The metal that moves through the real economy while still carrying monetary characteristics. The asset that benefits from both sides of the transition at the same time. And that is why this moment is so critical. Because most people are still thinking in terms of upside. They are asking how much silver can go up, when it will move, whether it will outperform. But the people who are already positioning are asking a different question entirely. What do I actually own if the system I rely on starts to change? And once you start asking that question, silver looks very different. It is no longer just an opportunity. It is a form of protection. It is a way to step partially outside of a system that is showing signs of strain. It is a way to hold something that does not need to be trusted, because it simply is. And if this transition continues, if the fragmentation deepens, if trust continues to erode, then silver's role will not just grow in price, it will grow in importance, which leads directly into the final and most important realization. Because once you understand what silver actually represents in this environment, you stop thinking like a trader, and you start thinking like someone preparing for a different kind of financial reality altogether.
Right, and you're spot on. Problem is, so the newbie jumps in and then deals with the counterintuitive nature of this market. And I'm out of this crap. You know, it's like, what? They're not seasoned well enough to understand the reality. They have a hard time understanding that this market had been controlled for a long time for reasons that worked in a system where the dollar in the United States was the emperor and trusted and desired, and our assets were sought after, our real estate, our treasuries, our stocks, our infrastructure. And then you look around what's happened to this country over the last half a dozen years and you say, my God, this isn't the place I grew up. These aren't the ideals that I followed, meritocracy and family and faith and hard work and, you know, the United States being the beacon of justice and fairness and equality. And I mean, you look around and say, my goodness, could this have been planned? I don't know. It certainly it does not, it isn't the way that I would have drawn the story up or any of us growing up. Yeah, but that is a good point. There is a glimmer of awakening. They jump in and they say, what the heck is this market that makes no sense? If inflation is running at 9% like we were way back, you know, a year or two ago, and all of these things, the world is crazy and it's still not going where it should go. Well, I'm out. That's exactly. And will be the last one to the party when it is so blatantly obvious that the dollar is in its final stages of being the singular sole reserve currency in the world. That's when they'll all that's probably when it's time guys like Rick Rule will be telling you to transition to some other undervalued asset. I don't know. I think you have to, in this market right now, you have to take a step back and look at a much bigger picture in order to see the truth and not look at it the way we've all been taught to look at things logically in orderly markets. These aren't orderly anymore because they...
And this is the shift that almost nobody is prepared for because it forces you to completely rethink why you would even own silver in the first place. Because up until now, most people have approached silver with the same mindset they use for everything else. They look at it like a trade. They think in terms of entry points, exit points, percentages, upside targets. They ask, how much can I make? How fast can it move? When should I sell? It is all framed around profit. But what Andy is saying cuts straight through that entire way of thinking. Because in a world where trust is breaking down, profit becomes secondary to preservation. And that is not a small shift. That is a complete inversion of priorities. Because if the system you are measuring your wealth in is itself becoming unstable, then measuring gains inside that system starts to lose meaning. You might have more dollars on paper, but if those dollars buy less, if they are harder to trust, if they are tied to a system that is under strain, then the real question is not how much you gained, it is how much you protected. And that is why he keeps coming back to this idea that you do not buy gold or silver to get rich, you buy it because it is wealth. Because wealth is not a number on a screen. Wealth is purchasing power. Wealth is independence. Wealth is the ability to hold value without relying on someone else's promise to honor it. And once you understand that, everything changes. You stop worrying about whether silver pulls back $5 or $10. You stop trying to perfectly time every move. You stop thinking in short-term cycles. And you start looking at the bigger picture, which is what kind of system am I holding my life's work inside of? And how much of it is exposed to risks I cannot control? Because that is the real danger here. Not volatility, not price swings, but dependence. Dependence on banks, on markets, on policies, on decisions made by people you will never meet and cannot influence. And for decades, that dependence felt safe because the system was stable, because trust was high, because the dollar was unquestioned. But if that trust is fading, even slowly, then the risk profile of that dependence changes with it. And that is why the biggest players are not hesitating. They are not waiting for the perfect price. They are not debating whether silver is too high or too low. They are securing position. They are converting paper into metal. They are moving from exposure to ownership because they understand something that most people do not yet fully grasp, which is that the purpose of holding real assets is not just to grow wealth, it is to carry wealth safely through uncertainty. And that is the mindset shift that defines this entire moment. Because once you see silver through that lens, it stops being optional. It becomes strategic. It becomes part of how you think about protecting what you have built, not just expanding it. And if the world continues moving in the direction we have been discussing, more fragmentation, less trust, more reliance on tangible assets, then this shift in thinking will not be limited to a small group of informed investors. It will spread, slowly at first, then all at once. And when it does, the question will no longer be whether silver was a good trade. It will be whether people understood its role early enough to actually benefit from what it was always meant to do. And when you put all of this together, the weakening dollar, the erosion of trust, the global shift away from a single dominant system, the surge in physical demand, and the quiet accumulation by those closest to the truth, you start to see silver for what it really is in this moment. It is not just an asset. It is a signal. A signal that the world is changing in a way that most people are not yet prepared for. Because every major shift in history has had this same pattern. The insiders move first. The signals appear quietly. The structure begins to change beneath the surface. And the majority only reacts once the effects become impossible to ignore. And by that point, the advantage has already shifted. That is exactly where we are right now. The dollar is not collapsing overnight, but it is being questioned. The system is not broken in the open, but it is being reshaped behind the scenes. And silver is sitting right at the intersection of all of it, a monetary metal in a world losing trust in money. An industrial metal in a world demanding more of it than ever before. A physical asset in a system built on promises. And that combination is what makes this different from anything we have seen before. Because this is not just about price discovery anymore. This is about reality discovery. About recognizing that the rules that define the last several decades are starting to change. And that the assets which operate outside of those rules are becoming more important with every passing day. So when Andy says this is not about getting rich anymore, he is not downplaying the upside. He is reframing the purpose. Because yes, in dollar terms, silver may rise to levels that seem unbelievable today. But if it does, it will likely be happening at the same time the system those dollars belong to is under pressure. And that is the part most people miss. The gain is not the point. The protection is. The ability to step outside of uncertainty, even partially, and hold something that does not rely on trust to exist. That is the real value. So the question you are left with is not whether silver can go higher. It is whether you understand why it might have to, because the people who see that clearly are not waiting for confirmation. They are already moving. If you want to stay ahead of what is coming in the silver market and understand these shifts before they become obvious, make sure you subscribe and stay connected. And remember, this is not financial advice. Always speak to a professional before making any financial decisions.